Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Welcome to Infinite Tennis. I'm your host, Phil Patton. What is Infinite Tennis? Infinite Tennis tries it all to find the clean edge. Infinite Tennis does chiropractic, Feldenkrais, myofascial release, series of tears, body awareness and balance exercises on top of the normal course of tennis training. An emerging theme on Infinite Tennis is the person of Tom Stowe, his body of work, and his coaching tree. Today's guest is Gary Adelman, a longtime tennis professional who will share how he became aware of the Alexander technique, explain what it is, and share some stories about how people have been helped by it. Gary was influenced also by Tom Stowe. My thought is that highly skilled players and those that want to be should develop greater body awareness. And we're going to a commercial. When we come back, we're going to bring Gary onto the show, and we'll be right back.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Okay, we're back. Hello, Gary, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Bill.
Okay, excellent. How are you doing today?
Great. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh, I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule to come talk to us today. Hey, so tell us a little bit about where you are right now. What are you currently up to at this time?
Well, I've been starting to try to get myself to do a lot of different workshops on tennis and the Alexander technique. Previous to that, I was doing mostly one-on-one private lessons, and each year I would maybe do one big workshop, but now I'm trying to travel around and really do a lot more of the workshop stuff.
And then where's your home base?
I'm on Long Island, New York. I'm located in Glen Head, which is about 35 miles east of New York City.
Okay, interesting. All right. So tell us a little bit about your background as a player. How did you become the player that you did, and who were your influences in how you play?
Yeah, so I started off playing tennis in the Eastern Tennis Association, and I was one of the top-ranked junior players. I was ranked number 4 in the East in the 18 and unders many years ago. And eventually I went to college. I went to my freshman year. I spent at Stanford University. And then I transferred to Columbia University, and I was the number 3 singles player on the Columbia team and the number 1 doubles player there. And then after college, I played on the satellite circuit for quite a while, and I traveled to Europe quite a bit, did that for probably about 5 years. And then eventually I went into teaching tennis. And the biggest influences in my tennis game in terms of coaches was a guy named Elwood Cook. And Elwood was a great coach, and he was a terrific player. He had been the Wimbledon runner-up in 1939 to Bobby Riggs. He lost to him in 5 sets. And
wow.
Elwood, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, that was just a little wow. That's nice.
Yeah, and then Elwood's coach was actually Tom Stowe out in Northern California, who a couple of years before Tom passed away, I actually worked with him for a couple of weeks out in Northern California as well.
Okay, that's great. So if you had to Elwood was very dramatically influenced by Stowe, so it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would you say were some of the key principles that you picked up from Eldridge?
The thing that Elwood and I think Tom Stowe was very big on was being really balanced, having really good posture when you hit the ball, staying pretty upright when you were hitting your ground strokes and your volleys, keeping your head pretty still, and hitting very smoothly, using the least amount of effort that you could to generate the pace that you wanted. And it was probably balance and simplicity overall.
Yeah, that's very instructive even today. I mean, yeah, it's, you look at the people that are doing the best, and they really do have a great deal of simplicity to what they do. Even Nadal, when you look at him in slow motion, his strokes actually are fairly simple. So was there anything about your time with Tom Stowe that stands out to you even now?
Actually, there was. When I called Tom and told him I was going to come out to take lessons, this was in February of many years ago, and he told me that it was the rainy season in Northern California, and I'd be taking a chance if I came out there and we might get rained out. So I said, no, I want to do it now. So I made plane reservations. I flew out there in February, and I was there for 2 weeks working with him every day. And the first week that I worked with him, it rained, I think, every single day. So what we did, because we couldn't get out onto the court, obviously, is we did a lot of work on his refrigerator door in his garage. He had a big refrigerator, and he would just work with me on just making really solid contact on the forehand and backhand strokes, so that, like on the forehand, my palm would have to just be really flush with the refrigerator door every time to work on really good contact. And it just was a really interesting experience with him, you know.
That's interesting. That reminds me of something that I used to do quite a while ago, is take a very large piece of plastic and have four people hold it at the four corners, and then have someone hit the plastic with their racket. And when you hit it completely flush, then it goes boom. It really makes a very loud noise. But if you kind of hit a glancing blow on it, you don't get the same effect. So you have that same thing to teach, the same sort of principle.
Exactly, yes.
Recently, Jim McLennan put on a Tom Stowe specialty course where four different of Tom's proteges all spoke about his influence on them. And so my question was to them, okay, well, Tom was in an age where the ball really did come to your waist level quite often. And then nowadays, most of the ball's shoulder level and above, you know, now
that's
what?
Right.
And their answer was, well, you know, move into a position where you can get the best possible contact point, but realize that might be above your shoulder, you know, but you can still attempt to hit the ball flush way up there. Let's go on to the next question. Okay, so at what point did you start, when did you get exposed to the Alexander technique? Steve Stefanke, who's also a Tom Stowe disciple, urges people to read The Use of the Self, which I read, and that details his honesty in detail about his struggles. Is there a better book out there that describes the Alexander technique, or did I miss the point of The Use of the Self?
The Use of the Self, Alexander himself had written four books many years ago, and I wouldn't say he's the greatest writer. So probably, if you really want to understand the technique, that wouldn't be the best book to start with. Eventually, it would be a good book if you kind of had a little bit of an understanding of it. But there are two books that have been written in recent years that I recommend to students. One of them is called The Alexander Technique by John Gray, G-R-A-Y. And the other one is called The Posture Workbook by Carolyn Nichols, N-I-C-H-O-L-L-S. And those really kind of break it down and make things much more understandable than beginning by reading Alexander's books.
Okay, so how did you get started with all of this?
I guess I was always looking for things to kind of give me an edge in my tennis game. And probably about 25 years ago, I was also somewhat stressed out at a certain point, and I had a friend that said, oh, why don't you take lessons in the Alexander technique? I don't know if it will help your tennis game, but definitely help your relaxation level. And I took about three lessons, and after the third lesson, private lesson, I went out and played tennis, and I hadn't played that well tennis in many years, and so I knew that something that I had learned in the Alexander lesson had really helped my tennis game. And then I was hooked on the Alexander lessons, and I took a lot more lessons. And eventually I decided to train as a teacher because I found it was really beneficial to me in terms of my stress level, in terms of my tennis game, and I was just really into it at that point.
So how long did it take you to learn the technique, and what is that process like?
Well, the typical Alexander teaching training program is a three-year program, and it's a 1,600-hour program. So it's roughly, 500 and some hours a year for 3 years. And usually the schools that where you go to learn this are small schools. They might have something like up to, let's say, 15, 20 students. And, the teacher will, who's teaching this at the school will, demonstrate something about the technique, and then you practice with other students. It's a lot of practicing with other students. And the technique is kind of unusual in that mostly the way that it's taught is through hands-on gentle touch and guided movements. So you're practicing with other students doing that kind of thing, and the teacher will give you a lot of feedback so you can keep improving.
Okay, so how would you describe the Alexander technique in about the most concise way that you can, directed towards how is it going to help? How does it help a tennis player?
Well, the technique is a general idea that it has to do with how we use our bodies. And most of us, unfortunately, were never taught to how to use our bodies in a good way. And the idea is that just about at every activity, most of the population misuses their body, meaning that they use too much effort, too much tension, and they're off balance when they do things. And this has to do with when they sit and when they stand and when they talk and when they walk and when they do just about everything. And one of the activities that they use too much effort in is tennis. So I currently specialize in working with tennis players, but the technique can be used for really improving how you do any activity.
Yes, that's great. Hey, so when we come back, we're going to go a little deeper into that, but so I'm going to run another ad, and on the other side, then we'll go a little bit further into that. I want to kind of share how I do my lessons to kind of dovetail with what you just said right there.
Okay, sounds
this
good.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your game to the next level.
Okay, we're back. So Gary, one thing that I've started doing over the last, I don't even know how many years, because I'm forgetting just about everything because I get old. I'm getting old, but I've kind of changed the beginning of my private lessons to every private lesson with every student starts with gently tossing a ball over the net from very, very close proximity.
Right.
And my thought there is that on a daily basis, we're going to set the tone for relaxation. So, is that something that kind of jives with the Alexander technique?
Definitely. That's just, there's many ways to approach the same issue, but certainly we're definitely interested in relaxation. The way that I typically approach my lessons is I'll explain to my tennis student that I'm also a specialist in this technique. And then usually at the beginning of the lesson with students that I've worked with for a little bit is I actually do some hands-on work with them while they're on the court. So I might work with them, have my hands on them while they're in their ready position, or I might have them do a shadow stroke, like a forehand ground stroke shadow swing. And while they're doing it, I'll certainly give them some hands-on guidance so that by doing that, I can actually change their whole movement pattern and have them perform the stroke and the ready position with a lot less effort and more ease.
Yeah, that's great. You know, the other thing that pops into my mind here is a number of years back, I bought a book that was about the kind of the subtle health habits that people have or don't have that affect them tremendously. And that one of the items in there was in relation to how you hold your head. And most people are unaware that they hold their head too far forward and tilted to one side or the other. So then, you know, then there's this exercise where first you take your head forwards and backwards, and then when you bring it forward, you stop when it's directly over your neck. And then you go left, right, and then you stop when your eyes are perfectly level. And so I've done this with my tennis teams, and it's amazing how they then, as a group, look like a much more confident group of people.
Oh, interesting. That would make sense, sure.
So then my own experience is that then my the tension of my neck goes way down if I'm currently pressing. practicing that. So what are some other common mistakes that people make in their use of the self when they play tennis?
Well, as I said, people use generally way too much effort when they play. And the problem is that eventually when you are so used to using too much effort, you're not able to feel what you're doing. So the idea with the Alexander technique is to get somebody to be able to be aware of how much effort they're using, to be able to feel it in their body, and then they can start to work with it and to release it. So typically when they use too much effort, there's a certain downward pull that you'll see in the whole entire body. So that means, our term downward pull means that everything is pulling downwards towards into the ground instead of moving upwards. So the head will get pulled down into the neck. The neck will get pulled down into the spine. The whole spine will get compressed, and the whole rib cage will get narrow and compressed, and the person will have difficulty moving and breathing freely.
You know, that brings up something else as well. Okay, so I've been watching these 3D skeleton images produced by Vic Braden and Andy Witzel, and they do...
Yes, super, they're great.
Super, have you seen those? On the So the thing that's fascinating about that is how on each subject... They show the upward and forward rotation of the hips. But the thing that struck me was that the hips come upwards on these great players. And I think that part of what keeps people from wanting to come upward has to do with their fear of losing their balance.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. That could certainly be part of it. Yes, I mean, there's many reasons why people get into different habits of extra effort and tension and off balance, and that certainly could be one of them, yep.
So what are some of the common ways that you work with people to intervene? I mean, you probably have your top three things that, you know, people most commonly do.
One of the things that I was saying is I can put my hands on them and kind of show them a different way that they can hold themselves and move themselves. Another thing that I often do is I might give them certain exercises to do at home when they're not with me. And I'm particularly big on, just like I think Tom Stowe was, on having people do shadow strokes, because then you can take a lot of time. And you don't have to respond to the ball, and you really can kind of correct things much more easily than when the ball's coming at you really quickly, and it's more difficult to be aware of, you know, what you're doing with your body.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how this fits with the inner game of tennis as well. You know, most people are familiar with Tim Galway's first book, The Inner Game of Tennis, but not as many people know about inner tennis playing the game, which I think is actually a superior piece of work because it's a lot more practical. So I was just going over chapter two with one of my students, and we were talking, and it's the chapter on leaving your mind and coming to your senses. Yeah, so, you know, people, it doesn't mean losing your mind. It just means... Getting out of your head that you can come to the experience of what you're doing. So I'm trying to come up with at least one really common thing that your people do, because I want to know what's the number one mistake that people make when they're using themselves. But you're kind of hard to pin down on that.
Okay, well, I can give you another example. I was saying there's this whole pattern that, see, we don't really deal so much with a specific issue. For example, if somebody came to me and they said to me, you know, I have a really good game, but my forehand really stinks, and I just have taken a million lessons, and I don't know what to do, but the forehand isn't good. And almost always I'll say, well, go ahead and hit a few forehands. and let me watch what you're doing. And typically, with for some reason with that particular stroke, you'll usually see a tremendous amount of pulling down. The neck will be very tense. The head will pull down into the neck, and there'll be a tremendous amount of shortening and pulling down through the whole body. So I won't actually work with their tennis stroke per se, but if I can put my hands on them and guide them as they're doing, let's say, a shadow stroke on their forehand and show them how they can release out of that downward pull pattern and release a lot of the tension and start to move upwards, typically the whole stroke will start to improve without me directly addressing anything that has to do with the forehand per se. It's just more their whole overall use of their body.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it goes back to that Visa ad with that featured Dominic Hasek, and it said, goalie stick, $500. Goalie glove, $750. Spine like a slinky, priceless.
So, right, exactly.
So there's a kind of a connection. So would you say that some of this is like, I'm going to make up a new phrase, all right, ready? Spinal contraction tension. So people kind of compress themselves because they want to create control.
Control is definitely a big part of it. And also, it's not only what they end up doing in their tennis game, but we're using our body 24 hours a day. So, for example, if you're sitting at a computer for many hours a day and you're really all contracted and everything's kind of compressed and pulled down and collapse and your focus is totally on the screen and you've lost touch with your own body, if you then decide to get up after a couple of hours and go out and play tennis, that whole way that you just held your body while you were at the computer screen, you'll probably continue to have that same use of your body in tennis. So the Alexander technique for tennis, you can actually be working on how you use your body at activities outside of tennis, and it will actually indirectly improve your tennis game, which I think is pretty neat.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Okay, so I took a listen to the description of the Alexander technique on your website, and it was two other people talking. I wasn't quite as interested as this if it was you, but they were talking about the word lifted, that the people who had been the longtime practicers of this had a lifted way of being, you know, and that they had a vitality that the others did not have. So can you get into the whole lifted and the vitality thing?
Yes, definitely. So the whole idea is that when we have this downward pull that goes from the top of our head to down to our feet, where we really compress ourselves and pull our whole body down towards the ground, we end up interfering with something that's naturally built into the body, which the natural built-in thing is this tendency for the whole entire body to what we call kind of delicately move upwards. And so from the soles of the feet to the top of the head, there should be this upward flow of energy that you'll feel going up through the whole entire body. And when you can get that upward flow coming through, and it gets blocked because of tension, when you get the upward flow to come through, then everything tends to improve. Things like coordination improve, timing, balance, and also lightness. So when the body gets contracted and pulled down, the body will get much heavier. And when the body starts to move upwards, then there's a sense of lightness and ease of movement, and the person will actually move to the ball with much more lightness and ease, and they'll just feel much easier and feel better to move.
Yeah. So, and that you know, on YouTube, you can find this clip of Roscoe Tanner when he was only 170 pounds. He was actually kind of thin, which was kind of surprising to some people.
Right.
And Braden did a study of how much force did he generate going downward so as to push himself upward, and it was something mm-hmm. like 370 or 390 pounds of force into the ground, but then obviously then there's the rebound effect and then all the energy coming up. So, you know, the equal mm-hmm. and opposite reactions, right? So, you know, that was also very telling, because here's a guy, you know, who's 6'1", 170, and he's hitting the ball, you know, sometimes 150 miles an hour, you know. Very often he was getting measured in the 130s, you know. So, how would you relate that to someone like a Roscoe Tanner? Do you think that he was kind of extremely efficient in that, or do you think he might have had some deficiency there?
Well, I would say when you see a player and they have like a great stroke and it looks really, really easy, it doesn't look like they're working hard, they're probably intuitively, naturally using the principles of the Alexander technique. They haven't been taught it, but somehow it's just in there and they never interfered with that good, really easy, effortless use of the body. But probably the other strokes that Tanner had, for example, I remember his ground strokes really weren't all that strong, particularly his backhand. So probably in those given strokes, his use of his body wasn't that good. And why was it so good on the serve and wasn't so good on the other strokes? It's a great question, but for whatever reason, he really didn't have it, you know, in all the particular strokes that he had.
Right. Okay, so now I think when you said the thing about 1,600 hours, I think that might have scared people. But let's go back to the 3 hours that you spent that you immediately got that benefit. So what advice would you give parents or players or coaches to help develop their own understanding of this so that they can get that initial benefit and then maybe, you know, over time go a little deeper into it? Where's their point?
Well, there's a few options. They could pick up one of the books that I recommended. They could go online and, you know, there's a lot of articles about the technique. There's probably dozens of websites so they could read up about it. They could take a couple of, individual lessons from an Alexander technique teacher that lives nearby them to get a feel for what it really is about. Because really, the only real way to really understand what the technique is to really have a lesson so that you can kind of feel it and experience in the body what it's really about.
Okay. So now, you know, I know that you had said that you worked with the Princeton women's team and that you used the Alexander technique with them.
Yes.
Yeah, tell us that story. You know, feel free. We have plenty of time. If you can tell us that story in great detail, that would be, I think, very instructive.
Sure. So for quite a few years, I had actually taught tennis to the women's coach at Princeton University at that time. This was in 2004, Louise Gangler. And I had also taught her mom and all her sisters. And, you know, they came from a tennis family. One of her sisters, the only one that I never really did teach, was Marjorie Gangler, who's actually currently married to Stan Smith. So we were always looking, Louise and I, she was the coach at Princeton at the time, to get have a way that I could come to Princeton and work with the players on her team, because not only would I teach her tennis when I gave her lessons, but I did quite a bit of Alexander technique with her as well. And the opportunity just arose where money became available from, you know, the school and also from a private foundation that I was being sponsored to be able to work with the team, the women's team at Princeton. So I basically, the way that I worked it is they came to practice the women's team Monday through Friday for about two and a half hours. And I worked with, you know, pretty much each player for just a little bit of time, probably about 10 or 15 minutes a day, showing them the Alexander technique. And we either worked off the court, doing a lot of shadow strokes, or a lot of times with Alexander technique, you might have a person lie on a table and you're kind of helping to kind of release and lengthen different parts of their body in that way. Or I might actually go out on the court and watch what they were doing and give them some feedback and maybe some hands-on assistance that way. And also, I would go to most of the matches that they played and, you know, give them some assistance before the matches with the technique as well.
Okay. And so what were some of the outcomes? I mean, were there specific instances where, you know, players showed dramatic improvement in a particular stroke or their results or... You know, what kind of manifestations did you see that way?
Yeah, well, we actually gave them a survey at the end of the year to see, you know, how they really liked it and what they thought. And, you know, there was overwhelmingly the answers from the players were that, you know, most of them felt that they really, you know, improved a lot through working with me with the technique. But, you know, I was working with them almost every day for the entire year. So it took a little while for some of them. But some of them, you know, absolutely really loved it. And the minute that I showed up at the courts, you know, they would come up to me and say, "Hey, Gary, can you work with me with the technique? I find it really helps me to move better and just really focus better, and it's helping my game, it's smoothing things out." And so I would say, you know, overwhelmingly, everybody seemed to really enjoy what they were experiencing.
Yeah, and I think part of the limiting factor is the growing culture of hands-off and, you know, coaches who've been inappropriate. I think that culture of fear that goes along with that kind of, you know, makes it a little more difficult, where you really have to gain the trust and the permission of the player. You know, some players might be a lot more open-minded to that and others closed off because of the, you know, their own personal comfort with being touched. I mean, I can see that as being kind of a growing issue. So
yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's something to be careful of. And to make sure that everybody, you know, is aware of what exactly are you trying to accomplish, what exactly, you know, I think it's got to be something where I think you actually have to be trained to touch in the right way, especially man to woman. I mean, it's got to be. It has to be. I think you've got to learn to be very clinical, I'm sure. You know, so that's, you
know. That's definitely true. That's a really good point, Bill. And I was always aware of that from the beginning when I worked with the women players, that some of them might have, you know, some issues with that. So what we did to get around that was that when I did the hands-on work with them, you know, it was either on the court where it was in public where everybody was watching what I was doing, or if I did it off the court in a room, the coach was always around, and so she was, you know, always watching what I was doing. So there was never really a difficulty with that because of the way that I set it up.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for speaking to that. Okay, so ultimately... the goal is to allow players to play their best tennis. So, if you had to give a kind of a fundamental starting place for someone in terms of they want to be aware of something, okay, and they're going to go out on court right after they listen to this, and they want to start somewhere right now. Mm-hmm. Where would you have them start?
I probably have them start with their breathing, because some of the stuff that people do with their head and their neck and their spine that I was talking about earlier, it's a little bit difficult to feel at the beginning, but it's probably most people are going to be able to tell when they hit the ball whether they're holding in their breath or whether they're really letting their breath go when they hit the ball. And if you continually hold your breath, which is really, really common amongst tennis players, you're going to get really, really tired, and it's going to interfere, actually, holding the breath with, you know, the whole flow and the freedom of the swing. So when you go out and play, just start to pay attention. Am I breathing? Am I holding my breath? And if I am, when I make contact with the ball, can I let the air out a little bit? You don't have to completely exhale, but let the air out a little bit and see if that might make a little bit of a difference, and that might be a good way to start to give you a little bit of a body awareness.
Yeah, and, I remember reading something about grunting and how grunting mm-hmm. is actually a very inefficient way of getting the air out and allowing your muscles to do what they need to do. That like you said, actually just breathing, just exhaling, you know, in what's natural and comfortable for you is actually a much better way to do it. So
I completely agree. And to me, the quintessential Alexander technique tennis player is Roger Federer. I mean, I don't think you could get much better in terms of effortlessness and flow and ease. And I've watched him up close, and I don't hear any grunting, and he seems to have had a pretty good record over the years, you know.
Right. No, I mean, yeah, and he's I don't think he weighs as much as he's listed at.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Absolutely. He's very, very fit and thin, yep.
Right. No, I'm guessing that he's probably somewhere around 160 pounds, not like 175 or whatever he's listed at. Yeah, he's definitely very, very fit and trim. So, yeah, I mean, he's got to manifest that. You know, I think another great example, two great examples from the women's side were Martina Hingis and Justine Henin.
Yes, particularly Hingis. I think, if you watch her, you know, the balance of her head was beautiful when she was playing. And, her balance was amazing. She was hardly ever off balance. Very, very effortless and very, very efficient. So I do agree with you, yes.
The USTA puts out the high performance, you know, newsletter quarterly, and they'll do frame by frame shots of players hitting forehands, and they'll compare three different players. Perhaps you've seen those. And
yeah,
generally when I'm looking at those, I'm usually more impressed with the women players because of the efficient flow of their strokes. So the examples are the Anna backhand, the one-handed backhand of Justine,
mm-hmm.
and then Hingis's two-hander. And so when compared
yes.
to their male counterparts, I mean, those are just very, very clean, clean, balanced strokes with complete energy return onto the ball, all of that. So I generally don't show even my male players. I show them, here, hit it like, if you can hit it like Justine, then you're going to be great.
Yeah, well, that makes sense because you would think that in general the men are, you know, physically stronger than the women, so they could compensate for weaknesses by trying to, like, muscle their way through it, where in general the women might not have the same amount of physical strength, so they have to be more efficient to get really good results.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, so now if you had to sum up, you know, this show – and into, you know, three kind of major points, what would be the three points that you'd like people to take away from this?
The first point is that no matter how bad your habits are, and the Alexander technique has to do with poor habits that we developed through for not knowing what we're really doing with ourselves, you can always change what you're doing. So even if you have a particular stroke that you've just struggled with for many years and you've never seemed to be able to improve it, this might be one way that you can start to try to do that. The second thing is that this has to do a lot with body awareness and really changing how you become conscious of your habits in your body. And it's primarily about learning how to lengthen out your body so that you're not contracting and pulling yourself downwards, but you're allowing this easy upward lengthening to come through your entire body. And the last point is that tennis can be a lot of fun and really, really easy if you kind of learn some of the principles of this technique, and it becomes a lot more enjoyable to play if you learn not to fight with yourself, but to do things much more naturally.
Yeah, that's great. And I found myself straightening up in my chair as you were talking there, so thank you for that.
Okay.
So
good.
All right, well, Gary, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate you giving us your time here. How could people contact you if they would like to have a workshop or come visit you for lessons?
Okay, well, my cell phone number is 413-441-0517. Or you can contact me through sending me an email. It's G-A-R-Y. 6155e@yahoo.com.
All right, very good. So thanks again, and have a great day. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thanks for having me, Bill. Take care.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
All right, thanks again. Okay, bye-bye. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Infinite Tennis on the UR Tennis Network. All right. I've been following Lisa Stone on Instagram, and she's a very busy bee at the U.S. Open right now, and she has lined up guests for about the next 100 years. So get ready for some great guests on Lisa's show. It's a long weekend this Labor Day, so why not sit on a lawn chair, get a cold beverage of your choice, and enjoy some podcasts of past shows. Why not? Thanks to all the people who've been listening to past shows. You can email me at infinitetennis8@gmail.com, infinitetennis8@gmail.com, or you can tweet me, infinitetennis8, on Twitter. I'm available in the 510 and the 925 for lessons, and now, as is my custom, I will leave you with this.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.